Hello, everyone, and welcome to the rebranded Sports Grid Fantasy Football Podcast. I didn't even tell our guest, Peter Overzet, about this change, but literally as we are recording this, the new episode of the podcast that explains the rebrand is about to go live. Peter, of course, a guest of the old Roto Experts Fantasy Football Podcast. We brought him in to talk about some of the high-stakes drafts that we've been involved in over the last week and the ones that we are about to be involved in. So, Peter, in your first high-stakes draft of the year, you actually got Justice Hill instead of not getting Justice Hill.
Yeah, I was going to ask, you know, we've done a few high stakes drafts. My total high stakes exposure to Justice Hill right now is 100%. What's yours at?
Mine's at a starling 0.0% if you include high stakes as anything over $1,000 because, you know, it was really important to get Delanie Walker in there.
Davis, we podcasted, I think it was like, what, 3 weeks ago, a month ago, we were talking about our favorite targets at high stakes draft, and you and me are both like, Justice Hill, not leaving the draft without him. He's the smash play. This year's Alvin Kamara. And then we just like ascended into the air. And then I'm looking at this draft board you guys post, and I'm like doing the like rubbing my eyes. This can't be true. I was like, no, this can't be true. What the hell happened?
I got sweaty. I got really sweaty. So we missed out on Austin Hooper, right? In the eighth round. That was who we wanted. We wanted Austin Hooper once it became clear, you know, we weren't gonna get Kittle, we weren't gonna get Ertz. OJ Howard, Evan Ingram, and Hunter Henry all went really early in our draft as well. And also some wonky things happened in our draft where no one took quarterbacks. Maybe that's normal, but it's not represented in ADP. Like, every quarterback went after ADP in our draft except for Lamar Jackson. So tight ends went over ADP, and then all the zero RB guys went early. Darwin Thompson went in the eighth round. Tony Pollard went in the top 100 picks. Justice Hill went pretty much immediately after we took Delanie Walker. So it just was sort of a situation where, you know, the draft got the best of us.
Yeah, I will say, I think it's a very natural impulse to want to do that, and that 1.5 points per target for tight ends or per reception just really ratchets up the sense of urgency. The one thing that Pat and I have done the past few years for our high stakes drafts that have kind of gotten us out of that mentality or making that mistake is reverse engineering our draft and looking at the picks that we're going to make in those, like, say, last seven or eight rounds. And when you know you have a couple tight end targets there, like for us, Gerald Everett has been a guy that's been our, like, backstop at tight end. And so we haven't been panicking if we miss out on, say, a mid-range tight end like a Mark Andrews or a Delanie Walker, just knowing we have some outs later. So that's like the one thing I would recommend to people who are worried about that situation is just know those ADP ranges and other guys you like later, because that can inform. It's like, okay, I can take Justice Hill here because I know I don't mind Gesicki in the 14th or Everett in the 16th, stuff like that.
Right. So
maybe you didn't prefer them.
Yeah, I actually really like the backup tight ends that we got. We got Tyler Eifert and Mike Gesicki, who, you know, I think going into it, I would have been like, okay, those are the two backup tight ends. Those are the two guys I would want in terms of, extraneous tight ends. But I would have liked, you know, Justice Hill to maybe go in the 11th round instead of the 9th round. So, yeah. Okay, this draft that you and Pat did last night, explain the format, the contest, and how you thought that it went.
Yeah, so this was our first time playing in the FFWC, the World Championship, and it's similar structure, I think, to the FFPC and NFC as far as kind of how the individual leagues work and then the big playoff. It's a little smaller contest, so the main playoffs have 150,000 up top to the grand prize winner, but the two big differences are it's not tight end premium, so the tight ends are not getting overdrafted. In fact, they're probably getting underdrafted, and the other huge thing is there's an extra wide receiver slot. So there's still the double flex, but you start three wide receivers. So for our purposes and for zero RB fans, this is you're able to start five wide receivers weekly as opposed to just four in some of these other formats. So it really lends itself to a zero RB build. But when we posted our board, I think people have been thrown off by some of the wide receiver values, not understanding the format. But when you take away the tight end premium and add the extra spot, all the wide receiver ADPs are really rocketed up relative to FFPC.
Yeah. So what was your experience in the draft? Did you have any moment where you were like, oh man, we really messed something up?
Well, I think we felt pretty prepared. Again, we reverse engineered this draft. And the thing, as you've probably seen with ADP right now, is it's very zero RB is getting a little tricky right now because all of the premium candidates who were going like rounds 10 to 14.
Yeah, they're going like six rounds earlier.
It's nuts. It's nuts. And it's really in the FFPC, it's so massively tilted in favor of people with that early pick that have the bell cow back, because it's really hard to hammer wide receiver and then have other guys sniping you on your candidates. But we felt really good about the draft. Our big kind of, we knew which spots were going to be tough for us. Justice Hill, we were obviously praying would fall to us in the ninth, because we were picking at 11, which meant that we were on the turn every round, which means we were either having to reach for guys or pray that guys got back to us. So that made it frustrating. But we ended up, our big bombshell was when you looked at FFWC ADP, Kittle and Ertz were falling to the late third, early fourth. And we were going to happily pull the trigger.
Is that tight end premium or not?
No tight end premium.
No tight end premium.
So I think that's a little bit of an overreaction, because I still like those guys at like the beginning of the third and maybe even late second when it comes to Kittle. So the fact that you could get them there, but this draft ended up, of course, being a little sharper. And the guy that fell at 311, and I know you guys took him in the Rodeo Clowns FFPC, was Damian Williams, was there for us at
311. Oh my gosh, you got him in the third round?
Yeah, almost.
Bring up your championships now.
Yeah, so here's our start. We did Juju Smith-Schuster, Mike Evans, Damian Williams, Calvin Ridley, Curtis Samuel, Will Fuller, Cortland Sutton, and then we started banging some zero RB guys, Darrell Henderson, Justice Hill, Ronald Jones, and
That's interesting. You still think that Darrell Henderson is a zero RB guy?
See, these are my favorite guys right now, right? Because we talk about like ADPs passing in the sea. I mean, you know, Darwin Thompson, Tony Pollard, even Breida, Justice Hill, they're getting so expensive. But guys like Ronald Jones and Henderson, their ADP is actually going the other way and putting us in the sweet spot of where they're great values relative to their price.
Yeah, I mean, I guess it is true that so what's happened is the guys who were trendy early, you make a great point. Guys who were trendy in May, those guys now actually, well, it's because they've had a chance to disappoint. We haven't had a chance to be disappointed by Darwin Thompson or Malcolm Brown or Tony Pollard yet, but we have had a chance to be disappointed by Darrell Henderson, by Ronald Jones, by Royce Freeman. Royce Freeman for a while this summer was a top 75-ish pick. Then there was the news that, oh, Lindsay's going to start losing touches. And then those two started converging in ADP. And then they signed Theo Riddick and they started falling back. And then Riddick got hurt and Lindsay went back up. But Freeman is still in a free fall.
Yeah. And I mean, the thing is these ADPs right now are so crazy and reactive to very small data points. I mean, take for instance, James Conner, literally since the last preseason game, week three, is now going a round higher. He is going in FFPC picks 4 through 7 in 8 and in these football guys draft. This is all because he operated as a bell cow in week 3. And people all of a sudden have zero concern about Jalen Samuels because of one preseason game. And this is the same thing I said to Pat about Darrell Henderson. If Sean McVay had one quote this preseason where he was like, we are excited about this guy, we can't wait to get him out in space in this offense, he'd be going in the 5th round.
It's true. Because everyone's just looking for confirmation bias one way or the other.
Yeah. So if we still look at some of these situations, and you know, Pat, my co-owner, he loves Ronald Jones, who in the court of public opinion just continues to take a beating. But we were talking last night and we're like, if people hate Ronald Jones so bad, Peyton Barber should be going 2-3 rounds ahead of him. And that's not happening. So you're telling me the market hates Ronald Jones but has no conviction on Barber. That's a situation I want to target.
Yeah, no, I actually think this is, I saw Pat with a low key, like very good coffin tweet last night. He just said, it's weird that it was something along the lines of, it's weird that the Buccaneers are playing their starting running back in week 4 of the preseason when in this game, okay, this is actually crazy. The Buccaneers played Vinny Testaverde's kid, who, according to my data, did not even throw a touchdown pass in college. And that was who was and that was who Dare Ogunbowale was playing with last night. So to me, I think maybe the Dare train is, I think maybe it's people are just looking for a little bit of anything for a reason to draft a player in the later rounds.
For sure. I, my comp, and it's not a perfect comp, but this is more for the Dare side of the comp, is that the Bucks backfield right now is pretty similar to the Broncos, in that you have Royce, Freeman, and Lindsey as kind of the 1A, 1B. You got Barber and Rojo, the 1A, 1B. And then Booker's going to get some pass down scraps, but not be relevant. And I think that's what Dare is going to be. He's going to get some pass down scraps, but I don't think he's going to be a guy.
Yeah, he's going to be like DeAndre Washington or whoever the Saints, the guy who backed up Pierre Thomas or whatever. Like, it's
right.
I think if your projection system has Dare for anything over 100 touches, it's wrong. It's bad.
Yeah. Yeah. So you guys took Damian Williams in the second or third?
Second round. So this was our decision at the second round was, so Kittle went. So that wasn't even a concern. So the guy that we were debating and, we kind of betrayed our zero RB roots because we did get David Johnson, who on my board is actually fourth. But we got the sixth pick and he was there. So it would have been a hybrid zero RB start. And I wanted Damian Williams, but I also wanted Mike Evans, but I got overruled by the other co. And I think they were probably right. Damian's probably more of a league winning pick than Mike Evans is, but is a little bit more hyper fragile. Actually, definitely hyper fragile.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of the same thing. You know, granted, in our draft, we did take Curtis Samuel just because we're trying to rack up wide receivers. But as like the closer, like the DJ Moore, Curtis Samuel ADPs get, like I want the DJ Moore side there. The closer the Damian Williams and Darwin Thompson ADPs go, I want the Damian Williams side there. I think the market's probably overreacting a little bit. But the thing that allowed us to so easily grab Damian, other than it being a great value, is like we had plotted out our draft. We knew the exact 2v2 we were looking at because we were going to take Miles Sanders in the late fifth if we didn't get a running back through four. And we knew the 2v2 would be, okay, we could take Brandon Cooks here instead of Damian Williams and Miles Sanders, or we knew we were going to reach for either a Curtis Samuel or Will Fuller. So then it's like, would you rather have Damian Williams and Curtis Samuel or Brandon Cooks and Miles Sanders? And we're like, we want Damian Williams and Curtis Samuel. Like that just ended up. So when you know those decisions ahead of time, you can really reduce the decision to like, oh no, we're going to throw off structurally our whole draft to no, let's just in a vacuum look at this 2v2.
Yeah. So that's interesting. You mentioned Miles Sanders. That is I guess when I did like my guys article on Roto Experts yesterday, I guess I've probably done 300 teams, but honestly it's probably more than that. I would say I've taken Miles Sanders 6 times maybe. But I was given pause because Sean Siegel named Miles Sanders his number one zero RB candidate. Give me your Miles Sanders thoughts.
Yeah, well, he's interesting from an ADP perspective because he was having this insane training camp and, you know, Silva's hyping him, Levitan's hyping him, then Sean Siegel puts him there. But his ADP is kind of stalled out. Like, he's there available in the mid-fifth to early sixth in most high-stakes drafts. So that makes him very palatable as your first running back, especially if it's at the beginning of the sixth round. So I still like him there a lot, especially say in an FFPC build where you start four wide receivers, getting a guy like Miles Sanders there as your first running back, I think makes a lot of sense. He still profiles as the guy that could really be a league winner there. Is that just still a little too pricey for you now?
It's very tough to figure out the balance between projections and upside, and it becomes more and more difficult the more expensive the player is. So like Malcolm Brown is free. You know, he goes in the 13th round or later in even like competitive high stakes drafts. So I just take him in every draft. I leave every draft with Malcolm Brown. But when you're looking at Miles Sanders, so in FFPC ADP right now, Miles Sanders is directly sandwiched in between DJ Moore and Mike Williams, who are like two of my absolute favorite players to draft. And I think probably that's why I don't like drafting Miles Sanders, because if you just ask me in a vacuum, who would you rather have on your fantasy football team, Miles Sanders or DJ Moore, I want DJ Moore 10 times out of 10.
And we, I'm actually in full agreement with you there. DJ Moore is a good use case for that. We would have, even in that build, if we started four wide receivers and we were coming back and DJ Moore was available in the late fifth, we would have taken him. We were on DJ Moore watch in this draft. We ended up taking Curtis Samuel at the end of the fifth. DJ Moore went four picks ahead. So I'm with you there that there is a big opportunity cost to drafting Sanders there. And then this is where you go back to the to why it's so nice to get that bell cow back in the FFPC, because then you free yourself up from that decision, because as much as it's still great to start five wide receivers there and get DJ Moore as your fifth wide receiver, I mean, it's tough then to really, you know, scrape together very high upside at running back after that. It's possible. It's just tougher. Here's something for you. What do you think? So now with Chubb and Connor, like, really getting pushed up in FFPC ADP, David Johnson sliding to
I've noticed the same thing in draft, where David Johnson was, for a while, was easily the consensus number four. And now over the last week, I've seen him last as late as 110.
What is your thoughts? I mean, I'm buying that dip, but do you have any concern?
People are bad. The reasons for David Johnson being the fourth overall running back are so obvious. You know, people have to ask questions about passing game work for James Conner and Nick Chubb. You don't have to ask those questions about David Johnson at all. You know, he is locked in. Probably the absolute worst case scenario for him in 2019 would be 45 catches. Like, there's no way he ends with less than that. 45 catches might be the 75th percentile outcome for Nick Chubb.
Yeah, and this is all because of no, like, overly bullish David Johnson news or reports. This, to me, this is like a no news is good news situation. And my argument has been this whole preseason that I do think that we all agree that there's some signal to, like, preseason usage and how players are being deployed and where they're playing is relative to the first team offense. But my thought is the Cardinals, relative to league average, there's way less signal to what they've done in the preseason to other teams. And I still truly think this offense is going to look a lot different and be way more air raidy, four wide, up tempo than they've let on in the preseason. And I just think that the amount of plays they could run, like, I think it still could take everybody by surprise, even though everyone knows this is coming. I just don't know why people are now off of this because of a few slow preseason games.
I mean, you do know why, though, because people, they just do not have the ability to underreact or properly react to new information. And this is why, I don't know, like, if you read, like, Scorecasting or Super Forecasting or, like, any of these, like, basically what everyone who's really good at doing anything that requires projection will tell you is that anytime you get new information, you should slightly adjust your expectations, but you should not completely dismiss all of your priors when you get new information. And people saw that first Kyler Murray drive, not even game. They saw the one drive. I don't even remember who they played. Or it was not the Raiders. It was the game before, I think the Chargers.
Yeah.
And he looked good. He sidestepped one sack and hit Keyshawn Johnson while he was on the move. And, you know, he looked fine. He looked good, hit a couple tight spirals. And after that, after a series where he went 6 for 6 and they punted, he moved up around. Christian Kirk moved up around. David Johnson was locked in. And then they came out against the Raiders and he looked horrible. And, I mean, dude, you can get Kyler Murray in the Draft Best Ball Championship right now in the 11th round sometimes. Yep. And he was a 7th round pick for a large part of the summer.
It's true.
People are bad.
It is. I love, like, Pat and I were literally sweating, like, the preseason highlights from their week 3 game, because we're like, one monster play from Kyler just destroys his ADP. And we're just like, please hold, please hold. And then we were able to get Kyler in the 11th round of our FFWC draft last night. And we're just like, thank God. Because what's actually nice is there is, even though the zero running back candidates have gotten pushed up, drafts are setting up kind of sick in that you get your wide receivers, maybe a running back early, you bang some of these premium zero RB candidates, your Breidas, your Justice Hills, and then right after that, when that dries up, boom, you're grabbing Kyler. That's kind of my thought.
Or whoever, right? Or Jacoby Brissett, or sometimes Cam Newton. Like there are just so many quarterbacks you can take. And the one thing that people have started to get right that they were wrong about all summer was Lamar Jackson. Lamar now sometimes in high-stakes drafts is the third quarterback off the board, which actually I think is indicative of efficient ADP, because if you were going to look at quarterbacks that actually have the ability to win your league, not just post like, you know, like 21 points a game would be like good, but that alone would not win you your league. But like a Lamar Jackson smash season gets you into the championship round of the FFPC probably. So I actually think that's indicative of like an efficient market.
Yeah. And what I've seen in drafts and what happened in ours is like Kyler's kind of the canary in the coal mine for Lamar. Like once Kyler goes off the board, Lamar's going like within the next 12 picks. You know, Mahomes, Deshaun Watson, Baker, Rodgers still tend to go ahead of those guys. But, you know, the one other thing that Pat and I, we've switched our strategy over the years in the high stakes contest. We used to just fully punt quarterback and we just go full late round. And we might have talked about this last time, but, you know, in years now, we really want to prioritize a really good crack at a high upside guy, because the flip side of being able to draft quarterbacks late also applies to drafting one early. If you whiff on a guy that has a wide range of outcomes like Kyler, you can just get your Jacoby Brissett that you just mentioned on the waiver wire. So as opposed to punting, why not take the crack at a top five guy knowing the safety net is so big?
Right. Yeah. So we took Matt Ryan in the 10th round, which I actually thought was pretty good. It was like a full 20 spots after his ADP.
Yeah, no, I like that. I like that a lot. I mean, Matt Ryan and Kyler are going around the same range. You know, Matt Ryan has both a high floor and a high ceiling. And that offense should be just really, really good this year. So yeah, no, I love that same idea. Like take a crack at Matt Ryan there. And it frees you up. I mean, because again, this goes back to the reverse engineering your draft. You know, a lot of times you have targets you like in the 14th, 15th, 16th round. Like we want Jalen Richard there. Like we know that if you know that there's targets you like, it frees you up to quote unquote reach for a quarterback early. But you can only know that if you've reverse engineered your draft structurally and know the positional allocations you're hitting.
Yeah, I actually think that's probably the best point I would give to anyone this year who's trying to draft teams that are really good, or, you know, maybe they're playing high stakes for the first time, or maybe they, you know, they lose their season league every year and they're not quite sure why. I think just the best thing to figure out would be what is the right allocation of roster spots should I have? Like how many running backs should I have? What draft capital should go into that position? How many wide receivers should I have? What draft capital should go in there? Same for wide receivers, same for tight ends, same for quarterbacks. And I think the right allocation in these formats is of your first 10 picks, 9 should be running backs and wide receivers with more wide receivers than running backs.
No, yeah. No, I definitely agree with that. And really, it's not a hard exercise to pull off. You can subscribe to like a site like fantasymojo.com and get FFPC Classic ADP, which is fairly representative of the high stakes stuff. Or you can just look for these boards on Twitter and kind of, you know, aggregate your own ADP. Take a look at the 3 most recent drafts you can find. Then look at your draft slot and know where you're picking in each round, and then start writing a few targets for each round. Oh, after I grab my kicker in defense, I really like it. You know, in Pat's case, it was on Tuesdays. Like, I really like Demir Byrd as a flyer. I think he's been getting a lot of run with Kyler. Maybe he's the guy.
It's actually been very surprising to me, but he played with the first team offense all throughout preseason, despite the fact that I haven't seen anyone write about him being like he was playing over Christian Kirk.
Yeah. But again, it's less about the player eval and then more knowing, okay, we're actually going to get our kicker in the 18th and our defense in the 19th because we know we're taking Bird in the 20th. So like when you plot these things out, it really just opens up your entire draft and you're less reactive to like, I'm just going to take best player available. And it's like, okay, but if you're not prepared to think about those allocations in your structure, that's when you panic and make bad decisions.
Do you have kicker or defense takes for the people drafting in the you know, these? I mean, it's actually sort of elitist of the fantasy football community to not talk about kickers and defenses because they're in every casual league.
Yeah, I do. This is, again, another thing that Pat and I have tinkered with since we first started doing. We used to fully punt. We were the, you know, defense in the 19th, kicker in the 20th, and we were streaming. But I like now getting a kicker with a later bye, a guy that you're not having to churn right away. We got Gostkowski in our draft on Tuesday. And then same thing with defense. Obviously, that's the position you're going to stream more, but getting a defense you can start even the first couple weeks when there are going to be a lot of waiver wire guys you want to churn, having those guys kind of locked in, I think is very helpful and just help save you some dollars and some priority bids when you start the season. So, I mean, defense stuff, it's just looking at these teams that have really cushy starts to the season, the Browns, the Patriots, the, I heard you guys having that fun debate about the Cowboys and the Bills on your,
I mean, I'm right. Michael is so clear. I let him have it, but I am so clearly right about that. It's like, not even the Cowboys are the number one team that people should be wanting to stream over the first 3 weeks. They are the best.
Yeah, and I mean, in our draft on Tuesday, the Cowboys went in the 18th, and the Bills were the last defense taken in the 20th. So just from a market perspective, too. But yeah, there are some of these teams that have really fast starts. I mean, have you seen the Patriots' like defensive schedule? They do get the Steelers, but then they have all some really cushy matchups, too. And if you're the Pats playing at home, too, like, you could still definitely get some interceptions off of Big Ben there. I don't think you're sunk.
Yeah, I mean, that's like, so I guess more than anything, I guess I would just encourage people to find defenses that play at home. Like, if teams have two back-to-back home games to start the year, I don't even care who it is. Could be the Raiders, could be Alabama. Like, it just, like, whoever, if home games matter so much to defensive scoring because it increases pass attempts from the other team.
Yep. Yeah, and I think that maybe one other take would be people in general put too much of a premium on like a defense that's not going to allow a lot of points, when really same with DFS, right?
Yeah, if you look at the scoring, it doesn't actually matter. It's so much more about turnovers, sacks, fumbles, and everything like that.
Yeah, because most times things, you know, people will prioritize like they want the iron curtain for their defense. They're going to allow no more than 10 points. It's like, you can draft the Chiefs, man. They're going to put teams in tough decisions and having to throw from behind, which leads to turnovers, which leads to high DST.
Yeah, they might give up 28 points to the Jaguars and get 3 turnovers.
Yeah. So yeah, don't be afraid of those bad defenses with really good offenses, because that, I mean, what was the best use case for that? The Rams Chiefs mega shootout last year, when both defenses or one of them in the showdown final lineup. Cause they had,
which is insane. Cause they had, I think the Rams defense gave up 51 points, but had 12 DraftKings DST points.
Yeah. So yeah. And, I would say that's one other hack too. If you have a pet player that you like taking in the 20th, push up your kicker and defense one round earlier and get your kind of priority targets there, as opposed to taking what's left on the heap.
Yeah, I'm good with that. Okay, so draft, this is the biggest draft weekend of the year, right?
Like, yeah.
So I want to do this. I want to go through, ADP is set. You know, it's not really going to change that much more. Top 5-0 running back targets. So after pick 100, I want to go through ours. So we're just gonna bite off of Sean here, and yeah. I want to give our final 5-0 RB guys that we want to leave drafts with.
So you say after 100, so that's like what, starting with the 8th round?
Ish. I'll give you leeway of a couple picks. So here, let me pull up FFPC ADP right now. The guy at pick 100 is Jordan Howard.
Yeah, no, thank you. We actually just did an article on 4 for 4, looking at John Paulson's main event draft for last week, and then doing our favorite zero running back candidates on that. But I would say right now, the premium guys at the top end of that range, as far as like going to be going ADP like 90 to 110 or whatever, it really is all the second year guys who bomb. Freeman, yeah. Penny, Rojo.
And they're all, so there are historical analogs to all of them who went on to have great success. So like I am not of the mind, like rookie wide receivers who don't get on the field and don't produce, the use cases are like, not the sim scores for those guys are really bad. It's not good. But for running backs, it's not true. There are guys who are third year, fourth year breakouts at running back.
Yeah. And, you know, for the sake of this exercise, let's just say, you know, Miles Sanders, Darrell Henderson, and Matt Breida are now going maybe just slightly ahead of that. Justice Hill too, obviously he's the guy, right? If he's there in the late eighth, early ninth, you still want to get him, unless Delaney Walker's there, in which case you got to get your guy.
Yeah. So you know, I can't engage with that. I can't engage with that. Justice Hill is the top zero RB target for me. It's Justice Hill is number one. Tony Pollard is number two. Darwin Thompson is number three. Malcolm Brown is number four. And then it would be like a combination of Nyheim Hines, Ito Smith, CJ Anderson, and Mike Davis for number five. I like those guys are all to me, they'd be like the second tier of guys who I don't view as like league winners, but as guys who are likely to give you RB2 production with, you know, a few things breaking their way.
Yeah, I do like that Hines now. He's dropping a round or two. You were having to take him in like the 11th, and now you can get him more in the Jalen Richard territory of like the 13th, 14th. And I like both those guys, Richard and Hines, especially if you've gone with more like higher, you know, variance choices like a Rojo, like a Penny. Those guys bake in a really hot, high receiving floor. So you can take shots on those guys, but then early in the season, like we will probably start, even though we drafted all those running backs ahead of him, Henderson, Justice Hill, Rojo, we will probably start Richard week one just to get that, you know, 10 PPR points alongside Damian Williams. And so these guys buy you some time to let the volatility.
Yeah, when you do zero RB, you need to understand that you're probably not starting Malcolm Brown week one. You're not starting Brian Hill week one. You're not like these guys are just not going to be on the field or going to see very limited, very similar to Nick Chubb last year. These guys are just going to see very limited interactions over those first couple weeks. That's not why you're drafting them. So yeah, you do need guys like Hines, Ito, Richard, maybe even Giovanni Bernard. Like, how weird is it that Giovanni Bernard has been like a zero RB guy for the last 5 years, and then this year with everyone talking about zero RB, he's like completely not a thing anymore?
Yeah, I know. And it's not like anyone else has been getting any, like, I haven't heard much about Travion Williams, the rookie, being involved at all early. So I mean, if Mixon goes down, I mean, it's going to be Gio getting that expanded role, I would have to assume.
Yeah, definitely. I think it's almost like Rodney Anderson is hurt. Travion Williams, like, I don't even, like, he could be cut. I don't know. I literally have not heard one good thing about him, and he's been banged up all preseason.
Yeah. So let's one thing about the zero RB discussion, because the guys that are the most fragile of all, right? Like, at least if you're drafting Miles Sanders, like early, you kind of know what you're getting. But with Darwin Thompson and Tony Pollard, these guys have a super wide range of outcomes. How are you handling them? Are you willing to pull the trigger on any of them earlier? Are they just a hard pass for you?
So for me, I have Pollard ranked higher than Thompson simply because I probably at this point, you know, now it is Friday, August 30th. The NFL season starts in 6 days. It seems that Pollard is going to actually start a couple games. Like, yeah. It seems like Zeke is not going to come back, at least immediately. No, I think he will. I don't think, like, Zeke for me is still a top 12 pick in redraft. So Pollard, I think, probably is a top 80 pick now, right? Yeah. Like, don't you think?
I agree. I was just pulling up. Levitan tweeted something earlier this morning, an article, and the quote was, "The Cowboys and Elliott's representatives have had talks in recent days, but nothing appears imminent." I don't know. I do think it's like, every day, like you said, we need to adjust in a small way every day that this continues, and that means continuing to inch Pollard up a decent amount, because it's a percentage game, right? Like, if you think there's a 25% chance that Zeke doesn't play this whole season, like, at what cost?
I mean, if you think the chances are that high, you should take Pollard in the fifth round, probably. Sixth round?
Yeah. I mean, there is obviously an opportunity cost. I still want Miles Sanders and DJ Moore ahead of him. But yeah, if your convictions on Zeke not playing are that high, then yeah, he probably has to be your guy in the sixth or seventh. And just the nice thing to hang your hat on about Pollard is it's not like this Rams situation where you're like, oh, Malcolm Brown's going to get some work. Henderson is. Like, Tony Pollard played every single snap with Dak in the ones. Yeah. You know he's going to be the full-blown James Conner-esque bell cow if Zeke isn't here. So that eliminates some of the uncertainty out of the situation.
It would be one of the biggest trolls ever if Alfred Morris got 22 carries in week one against the Giants and Pollard got like 2 carries, 3 targets. Like it would be one of the biggest trolls in the history of professional football.
Yeah, it really would. That would be pretty good, especially for the people then that who were drafting Pollard in the third, like this week. If that, I am curious to see, because we draft our FFPC main event team on Saturday, a week from tomorrow, which means we will literally have the Thursday game under our belts. We will have the up to the latest. And it's so last year at this time, right? James Conner was going in the fifth and Le'Veon was going in like the late second, early third. People still assumed he was going to come back, but you can tell by that price. And I think that's where we will be with Pollard, like you said, if Zeke hasn't reported. I think Pollard in the fifth, Zeke falling to the mid-second.
Yeah, I think that seems about right. All right, so tell people where they can listen to Shipmates.
Yeah, Shipmates. This is Pat and I were really worried that people would think our podcast was like a discount cruise podcast. It's called Ship Chasing. If you search
Chasing.
For that.
That's the Shipmates case. was the show that Tommy G was on.
So you can find Ship Chasing on 4for4. We have a full draft recap that we recorded live, similar to your Rodeo Clowns episode. So if you like that genre of pod, I think you'll enjoy Pat and I there as well. And also making videos for Roto Grinders this year. So been doing some best ball stuff. But this high stakes draft season has been a blast.
It has been. I can't wait. Doing another one tonight. We'll, of course, be tweeting out the draft board. Everyone give Peter a follow on Twitter, and we will be back soon.